Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Happy Monday, Dr. Paul. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank
you. Good, good.
Well, I think we can report on a confession today. The Democrats have conceded and admitted that they're in bed with the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And the deep state and the social media.
And the corporations.
And government mixing it all up. You know, there was a time when we would talk about free enterprise and people would get the heat. And then we knew it wasn't really free enterprise. It was interventionism. So we would say, well, it's crony capitalism.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really a capitalism. But I never liked the word capitalism that much.
Yeah.
So I like a free market. Capitalism was designed, and the word was designed by some communists. They make it sound work. But then there was the other word that crops up that I've used and I like too, and that's corporatism. You
corporatism.
Know, we'll throw it back at them. There is an ism, and that's been around. But Mises made a prediction many, many years ago. He says interventionism, that's what he called what we have. It's not free markets, it's not socialism. So when somebody says this is all socialism, well, it isn't. It's been interventionism. But his prediction was that it would become fascism.
Uh-huh.
Because that's a form of socialism, but he didn't want to use and just say socialism, socialism. And I think that's exactly where we are today. And what we want to talk about here to begin our program is that the administration is confessing. They say we want to work with the social media.
Yeah.
And it's been found out that they give directions. Well, they don't say it that way. But the people who they don't like, they can give the information to these social media to punish them, to put them out of business and strike them down and cancel them, this whole thing. And this was astounding that there was a press conference. It wasn't, oh, you know, that isn't true. We would never do anything like that. We think that would be immoral and that wouldn't be ethical to do that.
Yeah.
But that's not what we heard, is it?
Not what we heard at all. the opposite. But, you know, we've recognized the immense power of social media, because what it does is it removes the filters that the mainstream media have over what we see and hear. We now become our own editors. We decide what we want. If we go on Twitter, we decide who to follow, and we can create our own. Then there's an incredible amount of power. The danger for governments, of course, is they lose the narrative. They lose control over the narrative. So they've been, I think, for the past many years now, trying to regain control of that narrative. And we've seen it in Congress, of course. They do it in an indirect way. They call up Zuckerberg, they call up Twitter, they call up these guys, and they sit them down and they say, listen up, you better do more censorship. You better get rid of this. You better get rid of that. That's one thing. But we saw at the end of the week last week was something entirely different. It was the president's spokesperson admitting that they have people at the White House on federal government payroll being paid by us to look at Facebook posts and call up Facebook and say, here's the ones that need to be removed. And it's the most direct, I think, attack on the First Amendment we've seen and very, very openly admitted.
You know, that has to be the problem. The fact that they have done it before and they're doing it now and they got caught at it, that's one thing. Nobody should be, oh, I'm shocked, I'm shocked.
Yeah.
You know what the government did. But this attitude, I mean, it is so bad because this is normalcy. This is what is normal. And they believe this is proper and nothing wrong with it. And how many people will be alerted? Not a whole lot, but we did have we did have Glenn Greenwald speak out against it, but he didn't mince words. You know, I minced my words a little bit. You know, corporatism and crony capitalism and a type of socialism. But he said, this is pure, outright fascism.
Yeah, yeah.
When you put the business people together, business people with the government, it is a fascist system, and it's doesn't help the people. It has to undermine our liberty, and this whole thing is really the explanation the evidence that why do big business people send money to people like Biden?
Yeah.
I remember one headline, 100 CEOs supported Biden for president.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, we liked him because he stayed in the basement of the White House.
Yeah, yeah.
He was smart enough, or he had handlers that were smart enough to hide him.
Yeah, hide him.
But that is sort of a sad story. But anyway, it's out in the open. I would chalk this up as not only what they're doing as a strong negative, but the attitude being a strong negative. I hope we can neutralize that a little bit and call attention to a few people about what really is going on there and how bad that is.
And I think we should even just watch these clips. Probably a lot of people have seen them, but if you haven't, it's very important. Let's look at these first two. This is Jen Psaki. She's the spokesperson for the White House. She's the president's spokesperson, admitting what they do. If we get those queued up, that first one, up until, I guess, the 20-second mark. Here we go.
This is a big issue of misinformation, specifically on the pandemic. In terms of actions, Alex, that we have taken, or we're working to take, I should say, from the federal government, we've increased disinformation research and tracking within the Surgeon General's office. We're flagging problematic posts for Facebook that spread disinformation. We're working with...
Yeah, and that's where she's saying we tell Facebook what to take down and what. But here's a second one. And now, after an impressive bit of word salad, I have no idea what she said. She finally gets to the point in the second half of this next clip, which is to say, well, if you're banned from one social media platform, you should be banned from all of them. You should go to the gulag. Let's listen to her on this.
Providing for Facebook or other platforms to measure and publicly share the impact of misinformation on their platform and the audience it's reaching, also with the public, with all of you, to create robust enforcement strategies that bridge their properties and provide transparency about rules. You shouldn't be banned from one platform and not others providing misinformation out there.
Like, I guess this is fascism with a human face, you know, with a...
Equality.
A red-haired face. Let's look at the Greenwald clip really quick, because you mentioned, let's put it up for people to see, because you're right, he did capture exactly what this is. If we can put up that first pic, I know we're going quick here, but the first clip that we sent out, if we can get that up. Here's Glenn Greenwald, raise it a little bit bigger. He says the Biden administration telling Facebook what post it regards as problematic so that Facebook can remove them. This is the union of corporate and state power, one of the classic hallmarks of fascism that the people who spent 5 years babbling about fascism support. That was a great ending, too.
You'd think this would catch a lot of attention, but I haven't seen it on the evening news of the ordinary media. No, I don't think that's going to happen, but this is serious stuff. There's another. You finished all your.
Well, I have a couple more on this if you don't mind.
Yeah,
just another good green.
If you haven't,
because there's some good. Let's look
it.
At this next quote. Another Greenwald, which is good because this is kind of tongue in cheek, but it's not even that funny. He said, "Hey, has the Biden White House also begun identifying books carried by Amazon that it regards as problematic and instructed Amazon to take them down and stop selling them? What's the difference between that and what it's doing with Facebook? What percentage of liberals would also support that?" And then the next one on this, the last topic, is Thomas Massey, and this is a great one too. If we can skip to that one, he that's a little bit too big actually, but he goes on to talk about how this is the Ministry of Truth level malfeasance. They're literally admitting to colluding with media to control the narrative. That's censorship. These are state-controlled media tactics we rightly condemn in dictatorships. If an administration has a message to get out, let them express it. But when the government works to throttle speech with which they disagree, it has crossed a line. Well done, Massey.
Oh, that's very good. Very good.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking here about them being blunt about what they're doing, but they also have to have a little bit of collection of information.
Yeah.
And I want to let you know, Daniel, because I know you haven't paid enough attention, but our government spies on us, and they spy on people. And there was a release today, came with a Zero Hedge, and they said, the title said, "Leak exposes global abuse of cyber spying." So to find out who the bad guys are so that we can cancel them.
Yeah.
But they quoted Snowden on this, because when it gets Snowden's attention, we should pay attention.
Yeah.
And he said this leak. Now this is in quotes from Snowden. This leak is going to be the story of the year. That's how significant he believes this is. So he talks about a company that's in Israel that is used to spy more. But of course, this is where Edward Snowden became known, was the identification of what our government was doing in a massive sort of way at monitoring, you know, phone calls. But this evidently is an expansion of this, and it's targeted for political leaders and people who have been known to be assassinated. Khashoggi, I think, was involved on being spied on by this group. So this is still another thing that is in combination, which is an attack on our liberties, and it's a collusion of people, the big government, and the scary stuff is the power that the government has and the people who buy into it and the people who are left behind financially and for the protection of their own liberty is, you know, the average person, a middle class person that wants to believe, and they trust their government, they believe too much, and they're not willing to, you know, take a more cautious look at it until it gets too late. Oh yeah, well, the government said that inflation would be it'll eventually come, but a little bit, 2%, but it'll be transitory, so don't worry. Yeah, how many people now are saying, yeah, when's this transitory inflation going to go away?
Yeah. Well, it is chilling, and no wonder that Biden says there's not a little bit of light between us and Israel. That Israel does the spying on us for the government, or at least they help us out with it. So that's pretty disturbing. But we're going to move on to something that's happening soon, and this is something I used to look forward to when I was younger. And that's the Olympics, is opening up here in the next week or so, I guess. But it's not going to be like the way I remember it.
Japan's in the news a lot. They're involved with COVID, and there's a lot of controversies going on. And I think they decided that nobody's allowed to watch it.
Nobody's allowed to watch it.
So you talk about, an organization that we've talked about a whole lot. It's called Those People Who Believe in Marxism. What we're looking for is chaos, disturb people, and make it so confusing that it doesn't make sense on what they're doing. And what the way this has been handled, in China, it doesn't make sense. Oh, yes, they're all going to die if they go there. You know, this sort of thing. The lying that they did in the early part of the breakout of the COVID. All of a sudden, it turned out it wasn't quite as they said, and that's still ongoing. But so they have it. They're having no spectators.
No spectators.
But one that got my attention the other day, it's been around for several days now, is that there was a ruling that a transgendered male, who's now able to compete with the women.
Yeah.
And there was a weight loss in contest, and guess what? He's doing very well.
What a shock.
Doing very well. And this whole thing is, why do people put up with it? There was one day the news showed that, there was one of the athletes was identified as having smoked a joint, a week before.
Marijuana,
Boy, she's gone.
She's gone.
I don't know whether she's going to get back in or not, but that the emphasis on that, it was just clear cut. But what about somebody that's grown up as a male and had musculature and bones of a male, and they say, this is what we are supposed to do. Equality. We can't ever discriminate against anybody.
Yeah.
And what they really discriminate against is common sense.
Yeah.
And this whole thing, I can't see how. And even the business people who are always working with the government, they're pulling out of it. Because eventually the bottom line is saying, why are we doing this?
You know?
So it's, I'll be surprised. Can you imagine what it would be like if somebody who's worked for 5 years and finally gets to go to the Olympics and it's going to be this nonsense? And of course, it was pretty bad back in 1980, Jimmy Carter canceled it, canceled the Olympics, and the Americans didn't even get to go for political reasons.
Yeah.
That's why I always emphasize the sports, because I think it's one thing that you can sort of circumvent some of the political stuff. And the one neatest experience I had in Washington was when we took time off and the Republicans played the Democrats in a baseball game, and no politics were ever talked, you know, during that ball game.
Well, you know, the yeah, like you say, the men competing as women. Talk. I mean, there's been a war on men for a while, but I would say now there's a real war on women. And if I were women, I'd be pretty cheesed off at this whole thing. It's a ripoff.
It is. It sure is.
But, you know,
is.
Someone, I read an article that said this is going to be the most politicized Olympics since 1936. And they talk about, first of all, it's a joke with no spectators. The UK women's soccer team said that they're going to take the knee. They're not going to stand up. The U.S., Gwen Berry, she raised her fist. She turned away from the flag when it was flying. Turned, not just standing respectfully, but not saluting, but turned away. Other U.S. athletes were wearing Black Lives Matter patches. You got the New Zealand as a woman. So the problem is that people don't like this. You know, I was just did a little bit of looking before we started the show today, just for some relative stats. Baseball All-Star Game, I used to like to watch that too. A few days ago, I think it was just last week, the All-Star Game in 1980, we had a few less people. 36 million people watched that All-Star Game in 1980. Last week, 8.24 million watched it. People are shutting it off. They don't want it. Second least watch in history. Bloomberg, back in October, reported on the NBA Finals. A decline of 51% viewership from the previous year. Half the people turned it off. They don't want to be sloganized. They don't want to be propagandized. NFL, what used to be my favorite sport. NFL, the ratings for the fourth week last year, the fourth week of NFL, was down 70% from the previous year. People are shutting off sports because when they, it's a duh moment. Because at least for me, and I know it's that way for you, when I turn on sports, I want to see competition. I want to see people who've dedicated themselves to excellence, and I want to enjoy myself.
You know, it was under those circumstances of going and watching sports and enjoying it where people came together. But now the big question is, are you a Biden supporter or a Trump supporter?
Yeah,
and why should I hate you, or how I have to hate you because that's what it is. I don't want somebody criticizing me for being nice to each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a pity, but someday we may wake up, but not this week. Maybe something will change me even before the Olympics gets going. So I have something on children. Again.
Yeah, let's put up that next clip while Dr. Paul gets started on this, because this tells the whole story.
Okay.
Go ahead, Dr. Paul. I just want to put it up here while you're talking.
Oh, okay.
Because, yeah, it's terrible.
Well, very simply, there was a study in Great Britain.
Yeah.
Comparing children again. Children, most of our viewers know that children are pretty safe, and it's
Thankfully.
Very rare that
yeah.
they get it, and if they do, they survive. And there's also a study that shows that even if they have a bad disease, you know, a precondition,
uh-huh.
they still do real well.
Yeah.
So
Thank
the
God.
Children are really immune. And then now they're fanatical right now about giving shots to everybody. But all the children at an earlier age, and give them to them three times, as the number of complaints build and build, the complications are skyrocketing, and some of the predictions have to be wrong, because they're predicting, you know, 30 years from now we'll still be suffering from that. I don't quite buy into that, but it scares me a little bit that it's a possibility. But the story we have here is five times more children committed suicide than died of COVID during the lockdown. So, but we had talked about that a lot.
We have.
But here somebody did actually a study, you know, to show that it was much more dangerous going through lockdown than it was to have the virus and be exposed. But the whole thing is. They got sick, the schools were disrupted, and the suicide rate just skyrocketed. This was identified five times worse than if you hadn't had it.
The big question then for the UK, at what point do people like Boris Johnson, the tyrant of the century, at what point does he have to pay for his crimes against his own people? And sadly, it doesn't look like it's coming today or tomorrow. But we do have a good news story about... how it can come about. And that's what we saw in France the previous weekend and also last weekend. And in fact, why don't we put up that clip and just watch a few seconds of this clip that we have, that third video clip. This is from yesterday in France. Wide-scale protests. Look at this, Dr. Paul. This is as far as the eye can see. This happened across France, not just in Paris, not in Marseille only, but across France. And of course, the media, I looked this morning, I looked and see how the mainstream media covers it. Far left and far right groups got together to protest these sensible new rules in France. And now France has so many far left and far right people, they've got a bigger problem than just this thing. But the real issue is that Macron is a tyrant. He's an evil, evil, bad person who says you can't go to a cafe unless you have your pass to allow you to do that. And the people are rising up and they're saying, no, we're not going to stand for it.
And they were shouting, too. But they weren't shouting socialism.
Yes.
They were shouting freedom, freedom.
Freedom, and liberty.
It's fantastic. Yeah. But, you know, at times I have mildly criticized the French, thinking they should be more active. But when I look at that crowd, I should be shouting at it to American people.
Yeah.
We have crowds coming, and they're building, and there's resistance at some of the public meetings. But we need more activity. And that's really what finally makes the difference. You know, we complain a lot. We complain a lot of what's going on already today. But how do you answer? How do you answer? Is it going to be elect one more congressman?
Yeah.
No, we should elect as many people who are sympathetic. We need more Thomas Massey, you know,
Massey's,
that sort of
thing.
But it is something that is only going to change when the people decide it's going to change. I've been told over the years, and I had trouble believing it, but the longer I think about it, the more I believe it, and that is, The government has to always be endorsed by the people. I said, yeah, but what about communism? Under dire circumstances, you know, a lot of pain and suffering goes. But it was finally the people said, in communism, we've had enough.
Yeah.
They were the ones that, you know, chiseled the walls down and finally changed it. So that's what it is. So that, I think, that picture of the French people, that is just great. Maybe someday I'll get to visit France. I've never been there. I always wanted to. But lately I haven't had a lot of desire thinking, well, I don't even know if I wanted that European Union. I want to go to the old France.
Yeah, well, you don't need a passport to go.
I missed my chance when I got to go meet De Gaulle.
Yeah, exactly. Well, here's one last little thing, and I probably put these out of order, but this is something that I was scratching my head over the weekend, and I thought to myself, Dr. Paul is going to have an answer on this. And let's put up this next clip, because it's a pretty strange phenomenon that I noticed on Twitter. Excuse me. So this is Tony Blinken, our Secretary of State, and he talks about the United States is proud to lead the global fight against COVID-19 by sharing 1.5 million Moderna vaccine doses with Sri Lanka. Now go to the next one, if we can, and hit that next one. I think it's, and then they're sending 150,000 to Fiji, and actually go back one, they are sending 25 million doses to Africa, and then skip that chart and go to the Samantha Power one. Yes, yeah, there. And here's Samantha Power. We're going to send 1 million doses to Laos and do one more. The next one, 3.2 million doses to the Philippines if you go to that next one. So the specifics aren't important, but I just wonder what is going on. Why are we shipping millions and millions and millions of doses of the vaccine overseas?
Well, I talk about that group out there that likes chaos. This is part of the scheme. Well, the rollback is that the American people, you know, resisted a lot. They didn't take as many shots as they thought.
Yeah.
And of course, it was all for free, so you didn't have to worry about it. I mean, it cost billions and billions of dollars, but the individual didn't pay for it. It was totally out of the market, purely political, and there was money to be made, so they suspended all the rules that were meant to be guided and be a little bit more cautious about approving something, so they didn't have to go through the testing. And so they hurried it through, and it was free. So people came, but after a while, people became more skeptical, then they refused it.
Yeah.
Free didn't work.
Yeah.
And so they had a lot of shots left over. So well, we'll be gracious and pass this out and save the world. Of course, what we might be doing is creating more problems for more people if they believe, as we do, there could be some danger in taking the taking the vaccine.
Yeah.
So they do that. But, you know, I get to thinking, and I thought about what would have been like if it had been a free market. Well, there would have been a development of a vaccine, and there would be an analysis. You wouldn't have had the FDA or CPC watching it. You would have some monitoring, good housekeeping seal of approval.
Yeah.
There'd be a private place to go and look at this, and then there would be a charge that people would have to pay for. There would be. If this was a real thing, you know, a real problem, there would be people, churches and other organizations that would donate money and make it available. But the average person would be maybe, as we remembered, the polio vaccine.
Yeah.
We went to the doctor's office and paid for it.
Yeah.
It wasn't real expensive. But what if today, under those circumstances, you say, oh yes, that wouldn't have been fair. It might have been $50 or $25. And I thought, well, you know, compared to the way money is being spent around there, if it was worthwhile and you're making a decent decision, that's not much. But what we're having is malinvestment. The money is taken one place and put into it. It's added to the debt. It's the worst way in the world to practice medicine. And it looks like it's going to be ongoing because we don't know when the obsessions are going to quit. This passport thing, the Marxists love this idea.
Yeah.
And all we talked about earlier on was just how to spy on more people, you know, and tell what they're doing and working with corporations. So this is an example of the worst form of government. You say, oh no, only socialism, pure socialism. Well, this is pure fascism is what we're approaching, and this is why there's a big problem. But the whole thing is, I didn't go into it in much detail, but most people say, yes, but we need the government to do it. How could you distribute these millions and millions of doses? Well, maybe a lot of people's lives wouldn't have been wasted because we know about people who have died from the vaccine.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they wouldn't have had it, that'd have been 100% in their life. Their life would have been saved if they wouldn't have been forced to. It is not what they want you to believe, that if you didn't get the shot, there'd be that many more people have died. But we've reported the statistic. Not many people just flat out died from only having COVID.
Yeah, from only COVID. Well, and it is also a big dose of corporate welfare, too, because the U.S. government is buying these millions and millions of doses.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that the profits for Moderna and these companies are up. But I was going to close if we think we're about done. And there's that bonus clip that I sent over there, if we can put up that. This is something we announced over the weekend, Dr. Paul, and I'm super excited about this. This is really important to the Ron Paul Institute. We announced that our second, I would say annual, but we got kind of messed up last year because of a certain virus, our second annual Scholars, Ron Paul Scholars Seminar. We're holding it the day before our conference in September 4th in Washington Dulles area. And we did this last time. What we do is we get a group, it's very selective, only 10 slots available. We get a group of upper division undergrads and grad students. There's an application process. And if you go to ronpaulinstitute.org, that's up there in the upper right-hand corner. The application is easy to get through, but you go through the application process. There is a $500 scholarship to everyone who wins to pay for your travel, to help you get through your expenses to attend. You go through and you listen to some of the top people, practitioners and professors in practice of foreign affairs, of non-interventionist philosophy and foreign policy. And you sit there for, it's about a half a day. It's a great event. And then the next day, you're invited to a special Ron Paul Scholars table at the conference. So you get to go to the conference for free. You get to attend the seminar for free with a scholarship or a nominal charge, depending on how much it costs you to get there. It's a great program. Some of our really good friends are going to be there to give the talks. And I'd really encourage young people, if you're an upper division, undergrad or graduate, the only thing is, as it says in the article, you're going to have to do a lot of the planning yourself. This is going to be a test to see how you can do the planning and stuff for yourself. But we'd love to see you there. make your application. It's very selective, but we look forward to 10 good young people. We had such a great group last time.
Very good. And I'm sure it's going to be successful. And I like that idea because you're dealing with a select group, a smaller number. We discriminate in a good way. And I think that, but of course, discrimination has been such a distorted word because every single thing everybody does every day, you discriminate. From the moment you get up, you discriminate on, am I going to get up or am I going to stay in bed? You pick and choose and go different places. Anyway, the problems seem to be overwhelming. And we talk about that, but we always try to find some of these positive things. And to me, the positive thing is it's not as complicated as it seems. I think aggression and authoritarianism and greed and avarice, this can get out of hand because you end up with wars and welfare states and socialism and all the destruction of liberty. But the answers are not that difficult. It's just an understanding what liberty is all about. And that means that anybody and everybody should join because you don't have to agree on very much other than that your life is your own and you can run your life as you choose. You can do whatever you want with your life and your money as long as you don't hurt people and as long as you don't steal any property. So that seems so simple. The founders fully understood this. It's been understood throughout all of history, but there's also always this gnawing number of group, and they're always a very vocal, aggressive group, and they love to be in government. So the really bad people that want to control other people's lives usually find a place in government. Not necessarily, you know, getting elected, but the people who float into become a permanent bureaucrat because they can tell other people what to do. You've run into them. They work with the government and you don't get treated like you do in a true free market. But I am convinced that the problems that we have, they are not complicated problems, and that we try to tap into that, to find the people, have our conferences. So this to me is understandable because it's usually a small number of people who get together and galvanize and energize people. You finally have to get the majority of the people to say, yes, I want to live under freedom. And we saw it on that picture today we had of France. There had to be a couple people there that helped organize that. But it's just, when things get real bad, it's easier to organize. And that is what's good. People say, but people have to know, they have to be crystal clear on what they believe in and what has to be done, and then I think the people will join, because eventually the government is a reflection of what the people believe. It reflects, you know, an opinion, and that is done through education. That's why our program is designed for education. That's why I'm delighted with the program that Daniel works so hard with, is getting some people who will become and probably are already leaders. And what was pleased me so much about the campaigns, the presidential campaigns, is there's so many who have come out in 08 and 12, have their own organizations already. We meet them. They've been on this program. So it's contagious. And the one thing is, you never know how many people out there have been influenced. So that's why I invite everybody to be involved. And one thing that I did over the years before I ever even thought about running for office was I would go to the seminars that Leonard Reed would hold. And now I encourage so many people have gone to Lou Rockwell's seminar with the Mises Institute. And now we're inviting you to ours as well. And we will do our best to energize people into saying, yes, this problem can be solved because, you know, truth wins out in the end. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.